Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
There's a man with a leaf blower outside my door.
What does he want?
To blow leaves, I think.
At least he's not there to wash your windows. That's a way back joke from elementary school.
What day is it? Does anybody know what day it is?
Who can tell anymore?
I don't know.
I think it's theoretic. You know what? It's Good Friday, Jason.
What's so good about it?
Yeah, it's all right. It's Passover. Happy Passover.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening this weekend. It makes it tough to schedule podcasts.
Apparently, yeah. Yeah.
It's funny. We have we had a D&D thing that got moved because of a Passover Seder, and I had some other podcast that I had to move because of Easter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They don't always
line up like this, but they do this week.
Yeah, no, it's a big 1-2 punch. You can have your bitter herbs and then your chocolate bunny.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see how this plays out. Usually we do both in my family. I'm going to a Seder tonight at my parents' house, but I don't think we have any Easter plans this year. Maybe some chocolate eggs will materialize.
Ah, yes. Well, that's I don't really know how she does it, but my wife often will present me with some white chocolate at some point. I used to get a white chocolate bunny every year for Easter, I do like the white chocolate, and I only really have it once a year, usually at Easter, but we'll see. She's been really busy this week. I might just have to go get some white chocolate in the remainder bin next week myself.
It'll be cheaper.
It will be cheaper. Yeah, it's just like flowers.
Get those Cadbury eggs at a discount.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. This is the UL conference in Ireland was on around Easter, not on Easter, but around Easter two of the last 3 years, I think, because twice I visited James Thompson in Glasgow. And they have a Waitrose around the corner, a supermarket, from their house, and they had like an entire aisle of these like Lindt chocolate bunnies. And as a visiting American, I was like, oh well, this is adorable, and I would buy them and bring them back for my kids. And I realized that became kind of a thing. I did that a couple of times, and so now it's Easter, and I remember those trips because they were about this time, but not this year. So it's just going to be some marshmallow peeps, I guess. You dip those in the salt water at the Seder, the marshmallow peeps.
Yeah, that's
peeps.
Right, the bitter peeps.
Mm-hmm. The bitterest peeps, that's right. Why is this night not like other nights? And the answer is because tomorrow it's Easter.
Tomorrow's Easter.
Yeah. We're mixing it up. Hey, welcome to the Sacrilege Podcast, where all religions get mixed up together. The leaf blower guy, he's still out there. He's still out there. And I don't know why it's Friday, because I flew to Chicago on Monday afternoon.
Boy, are your arms tired.
And I went straight to the hotel, which was literally next door to the exit from the L. So, which is why I picked it. It was great. Walked into the lobby. Bradley Chambers and a bunch of other people were there. So people for the Apple event were at my hotel lobby when I arrived. That was pretty funny. They identified me. I was a guy who had just gotten off of a 5-hour plane and ridden on a subway for 45 minutes and checked into his hotel and was completely exhausted. And all of a sudden I was supposed to interact with like 6 different people. It was hard on my brain. They were very nice people. I don't want to say anything, you know, that suggests otherwise. They're very nice people, but I did have that moment where my brain's like, oh, we're doing this now, talking to humans, got it, because I had not done that for 7 or 8 hours while I was traveling. I was just in my own little world, and all of a sudden my tired brain was like, oh yes, hello people, let's talk, who I did not expect to be here, who know who I am, let us talk about computers and education things. And oh boy, so I did all that. I feel like there should be a word for this. When you go into a hotel room and you enter, and the only other time you use the door to the hotel room is when you leave. you don't go out and do something else, nothing like that. You enter the hotel room, go to sleep, wake up, exit the hotel room, because that's what I did in that hotel. It seemed like a perfectly nice hotel. I did not really use the facilities. Immediately went downstairs, checked out. I was prepaid, so that took like 2 seconds, and my Lyft was outside and I left. It was you know, so that was pretty minimal. And then there was the Chicago event, and then I saw a friend for a couple of hours right after recording Upgrade over at Chicago Podcast Co-op Central. And then it was back to the airport, where my flight was delayed by 2 hours, and I got home at 1 a.m. But wait, there's more. I got to go down to Apple on Wednesday morning and pick up a sixth generation iPad. But my pickup time was like 11 a.m. So that's basically 3 hours in the car round trip, plus a 30-minute break in the middle. And what I'm saying is, Dan, this is why I don't know what day it is, compounded by the fact that I actually had a podcast that I usually do on Fridays that for various reasons we recorded yesterday. So is it Saturday? Is it Wednesday? I don't even know. So when you pinged me and said, hey, we traditionally do the secret podcast on Thursday or Friday, and if you don't do it on Thursday, process of elimination, it's Friday. And I was like, oh, that's what day it is. I should have known from the leaf blower man, but I didn't.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, the leaf blower man is a crucial sign.
Who watches the leaf blower man?
Actually, is it who blows the leaves of the leaf blower man? Does he blow his own leaves?
I hope it's the leaves. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was very careful about the
really
way I phrased that.
Danger, danger.
Very careful.
A good friend of the leaf blower man. That's who.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we took advantage of you being at the event, and the event, of course, didn't have a live stream for the first time in 6 years, we've decided, roughly, since the last education event was the last time they didn't have a live stream, I think. So Lex Friedman and John Moult and I hijacked, with your permission, the incomparable live server and did a live version of The Rebound, which we had never done before, which ended up being a lot of fun because since the event was only an hour and our normal recording time is noon Eastern on Tuesdays, it was basically right after the event ended. So we got to have a chance to actually so often with that show, we start recording and have to guess what's going to happen. So it was nice to have an immediate chance to respond and react to things. But it was also, as I'm sure we both discussed in multiple places, it was a different sort of event. It wasn't necessarily targeted at, the usual Apple audience. And there wasn't perhaps quite as much to chew on. Certainly not as much as you'd get from an event like WWDC or the September event. But, there were some announcements, which is always nice to have an idea of something to talk about that's new and different, or in some cases, new and not so different.
Yeah, I wrote what I wrote in the Six Colors magazine, which will be shipped out shortly. It's done. I just was waiting for you to tell me if there were horrible things in it that needed to be fixed. I mentioned that Apple would not call an event and say, hey, here's the new 329 iPad. Yay. They wouldn't do that. It's not enough. It's not enough for an event. But you stage it in Chicago and you make it a story about education and you wrap in software updates and services updates and all sorts of things like that. And then you got something. Still not, not a heavyweight event. In fact, it was basically an hour. But, but it was something tangible because it was about something and the story that they're trying to tell about education. And that made it relevant and interesting in a way that an event, if they called everybody to the Steve Jobs Theater and said, hey, a 329 iPad that uses the Apple Pencil, bye everybody, would not be received as well.
Right, right. That'd be a hard sell for the crowd that's coming in for that. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds like education's also a slightly interesting angle because we have a lot of people who are experts in technology, but not experts in education. And we have some people who manage to straddle that line. But the education audience is very, very different from your typical Mac audience. So it's always interesting to see how people respond to it because, the perspective they're coming at it from is different and the expectations are different. So I think, as you talked about a little bit in your column, spoilers, like you said, the story you're telling here and the job that Apple's trying to do is a little bit different than you know, what they might be setting out to do in other circumstances, which is in this case mainly to like sort of keep themselves in the game here, rather than necessarily seize a whole bunch of market share.
Yeah, yeah, it's, I mean, I think it's funny that you do a mild context switch and people go back to their default assumptions that are not right about Apple, which is, this is really serious for Apple. They need to do something here to gain market share. Think about that. Like, when has Apple's strategy ever been to offer something that is going to match or come close to the low price product that's gaining market share just so that they can gain market share? Never, 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 never. It's not what Apple does. Now, I'm not saying that Apple doesn't have issues in education. When one of your competitors goes from like 9% of the market to more than 50% of the market in 3 years, it's a big deal. Like, it's a huge deal. But Apple's goal is not to beat Chromebooks on price or match them or come close to them. It's to get their price competitive enough that they can make an argument that for the additional money you spend, you get more. You get more, you know, it's better stuff. It's more resilient hardware that has more residual value when your lease ends, and that the services that Apple offers offer things that Google doesn't offer. Plus, it's compatible with Google stuff. Like, you tell this more complex story, and yes, what you were saying is that if all you're looking for is price, Apple's not for you. How is that different from any other segment Apple's in? That's Apple. That's just how it is. And there are people who do subscribe to the idea that but you've got to get the kids early, or you lose them forever, and they'll just be Chrome OS users forever. And to that, I'll say there's something to that, but I think it is deeply overstated. And I think Chromebooks, as somebody who has a child who used a Chromebook for several years in my house, right? I can tell you, I don't see a lot of loyalty among kids to Chromebooks. They don't have much personality. They are just laptops with browsers in them. Kids have loyalties to their phones.
Right.
And to iPads, honestly, kids who use iPads have loyalty to iPads. I think kids have loyalty to computers like, you know, Windows PCs or Macs. But Chromebooks are like faceless and empty, and a school managed one even more so. I don't really buy the idea that once you get them on a Chromebook, you're going to keep them forever. I don't think that there's actually Apple's in risk of a kid with an iPhone and a Chromebook at school is loyal to Apple. I mean, really. So I don't really buy that argument.
And there's a capability question too, right? As you say, with Chromebooks, which are basically just browsers, I mean, it's a portal onto web. The web is brandless, right? Yeah. Like, the web is whatever site you're going to.
Yeah, I mean, and they use Google Docs. Schools use it with Google Classroom. They're using Google Docs. There's Google is
yeah,
there.
Yeah, but you use all these things on your other platforms, exactly as you point out.
Honestly, Google only cares that they may, when they enter the other phases of their lives, view Google Apps favorably and want to use Google Docs or Gmail or whatever. And that's all they really care about, because
they
don't care if you buy a $150 laptop or Chromebook laptop from some company that makes Chromebook laptops. They literally don't care. And so that's a funny combination too, where like they're perfectly fine with you using Google Classroom on iPads. So there's an either or here that also is a discontinuity. And yet when people talk about this, they read it that way. And again, I'm not trying to downplay that Apple's got lots of issues in education, but some of the issues that get brought up are not really smart, because they're lazy. They're falling back on the old ways we look at markets, which is, oh geez, Apple's got to cut their prices and get big market share, and the education market's all about capturing users forever. And I just I don't think that is the right way to approach it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very different than it used to be, too, in that, like, kids do have their own devices with them at all times now, as opposed to 10, 15 years ago, that was not the case. You know, kids going into school at that point there were no smartphones for them to have, right? In the same way that when you and I and people of our generations were growing up, you know, maybe you had some computers in a lab at your school, but you certainly didn't have your own, like, certainly not to carry around with you. Maybe you had one at home. It's a very different environment. So, you know, people already are exposed to and have loyalties well before they even come into school.
Right.
And let's just be honest, no students don't really feel like, I feel like the school has never been a place, like the school administration has never been like a trendsetter. It's not like, oh yeah, what my school is giving me is so awesome, I'm totally loyal to that.
Yeah, also I think their story, the story is much more powerful in K through 12 and maybe even K through 8 and maybe for, you know, but for Chromebooks, the story is more powerful before you get into higher ed, where I haven't seen a lot of stories about Chromebooks in higher ed. They may exist, but like college students seem to, you know, get a laptop or something or a tablet or whatever, and not just a, I mean, Chromebooks or laptops, they're fine, but that there's nuance in the different age ranges. 'Cause I've also heard that like iPads are way more popular in, you know, K through six, where typing big, long chains of words is not as big a deal. And that like multimedia and touching the screen and stuff are much more at the center of the experience than they are maybe when you're writing papers later on.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally different from higher education. I was talking for a while yesterday with our good friend Tony Sindelar, who works in higher education in technology. And so, you know, we were discussing this event a little bit, and he was talking about how, you know, the higher ed story is almost entirely different. Google is much smaller player there, too. You've got like big entrenched companies like Blackboard who have a much bigger share of the like software, courseware type stuff. And it's, you know, it's a whole different ball game at that point too. So Apple, I think, has probably spent a lot more time targeting K through 12 because it's a little more structured in that way. And because when you hit the point at college, it's like people are buying their own devices. And at that point, I think they have a pretty solid grip on people buying Apple devices to take to college with them. Like that has not been a challenge for them over the past couple decades.
Yeah, and this is I'm going to segue a little bit here. There's the stories about how Microsoft is reorging the Windows division, and how like somebody with Windows in their job title is no longer going to be part of like the main, you know, leadership team at Microsoft, and it's getting, you know, they're going to focus on AI and all these things, and it could be viewed as just another corporate restructure. But there are a lot of people who've been writing about Windows for a long time who have taken it as being like the writing on the wall for Windows, that like this is Satya Nadella saying, you know, Windows will be around, but it's not the core of what we do, and we're building for the future and for services and all sorts of other stuff. And it's fascinating to me because we have the same question about Apple. Like the Mac didn't come up, except in one hilarious context where they're bringing Classroom app to the Mac from iOS, right? Because teachers often are not using iOS and prefer to use a Mac because they're old and they use computers. Makes me laugh every time I think about it. Like, oh, that's your Mac reference. But I think when you talk about like questioning the validity of Windows as a future direction for Microsoft, it really puts into relief all of the conversations that we have about the Mac and iOS for Apple, right? And like, what's the future of the Mac, and is the destiny of the Mac like Windows sort of a legacy, keep it around, but it's not the future and we're building to other things kind of product? And I think the answer is yes. That's even as Apple does things like the iMac Pro, and they're going to do a Mac Pro, it's, you know, clearly not their focus in a lot of markets, and it is on its way to becoming that metaphorical truck that Steve Jobs talked about. And you see it, this is one of those the areas where I think it is interesting, is the idea of, you know, as these kids grow up, at what point do they start thinking, why would I, you know, take a laptop to college? And I don't think we're quite there yet, but we had a good conversation on Download this week about this. Like, Michael Gartenberg was saying, you know, keyboards are always going to be around. And Cicero Holmes and I were both like, well, are they? Like, I think there's an argument to be made that the younger you are, or the way I put it was, the later your birth year, the less likely you are to care about typing on a screen. And right to the point where maybe physical keyboards are like a nice to have or a not entirely necessary. I don't know. But this takes me back to my iOS laptop argument, too, which is, even if you do want a laptop, would Apple be better off? I mean, in the education context, we talk about these cheap Chromebooks. Like, Apple's cheapest laptop is $999. What if Apple did an iOS laptop that was $450 or $550 or something like that, or $650. The Apple could make theoretically an iOS laptop that was way cheaper than the cheapest Mac laptop, and that would potentially have good profit margins and be strong in education. So I don't know. There's, you know, I think intertwined with this whole conversation is the conversation about Apple's platform futures, because this education event was entirely about iPad and iOS and not about the Mac. And what does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's still, that's something we've talked about a bunch in the past couple of years, is how long does Apple want to maintain two big major operating systems,
right?
And what is the future of the form factor,
right?
Yeah, I mean, or various devices, you know, there's so many different options that you can have. Should they be running one platform, or do they really need to be running different platforms?
There's the conspiracy theory, which was that the Classroom app, there are a bunch of things that were announced today that are like in June, you'll get them in June, which everybody's like, well, what's that all about? And I don't think it's like because of WWDC, although it's possible. But the one conspiracy theory that I think is interesting is the idea that the Classroom app, which is going to be taken from iOS to Mac, is coming in June. And somebody was saying, well, you know, that's the rumor, is that in June they're going to talk about this technology that they're supposedly building that lets iOS development turn apps into Mac apps. And this is an example where they might potentially be eating their own dog food in taking the Classroom app and turning it into a Mac app. But I was thinking beyond the conspiracy theory, I was just thinking again about how if you live in a world where, first off, Chromebooks make more sense if you live in a world where nobody's particularly motivated to build apps for desktop platforms, right? Like,
right.
Because at that point, it's all on a browser anyway. And so why do you need, like Jamie, even though she's got a MacBook now, after having that Chromebook for a few years, she's mostly in the browser. Like, she doesn't really have a lot of apps. I mean, she might use iMovie or Final Cut, but she doesn't have a lot of apps. So it's not that different an experience for her. And if you're Apple, you're like, that's not great. That's not a great thing. And you've got this great app platform on iOS. So, I mean, how would they not, you know, maybe that is their strategy with the Mac, is in the future, the Mac is going to have its layer of pro apps that everybody wants that are going to be like Final Cut. And then for literally for everything else, it's just running iOS apps, just like in the same way that Chrome OS can run on certain devices, can run Android apps now.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty. I mean, I was having, where was I having this conversation the other day about technology? A friend of my girlfriend's, I think, we were talking. He's a tech guy who's also like a business guy, and we were having a chat, and it's talking about sort of the state of things right now. And sometimes it feels like a lot of the low hanging fruit of technology has been sort of snapped up over the past few years, and there's still like stuff still moving along, but in some ways it feels like the slope of the curve has changed, because we had such a huge slope when smartphones first came out, right? Like, that was such an exponential and quick change in the grounds of technology that it started to become, we've hit that, you know, a more gentle slope as we've all gotten very accustomed to having smartphones and tablets and stuff in our lives. There's still, you know, stuff happening. Home automation, smart home stuff is sort of like ramping up a little bit, but we haven't had like an exponential like jump, or a, you know, if you want to call it a quantum leap or whatever, you know, like in a little while now. And so it sometimes feels as though a lot of the stuff is kind of in this, you know, holding pattern of like, we're going to keep iterating, we're going to keep making better versions of what we're making, but you know, our tendency as humans is to look forward to that next big thing and try to figure out, like, what is the next thing that's really going to change our lives where technology is concerned? And I think there's a lot of things out there right now that might fit that bill. You know, we've talked a lot about augmented reality, about autonomous vehicles, you know, all this stuff, wearable devices, and none of them have quite hit that point where they really have changed, you know, everything in our lives. And maybe they won't be like the smartphone in that hits and immediately changes everything. Maybe they'll be more gradual. I think certainly voice assistants have followed that pattern more, where it's, you know, they've been around for a while, but we haven't like had quite as like big and this is happening and it's like, you know, changed everything. It's just that it's sort of like gradually changed a lot of things. But you know, I feel like there's development happening that's going to result at some point in something else that's going to be sort of a big shakeup. But I don't know. Whatever that is, it's still a ways off, I think.
Yeah. I feel sometimes like we are the proverbial frog in the boiling water.
Right.
That, you know, you don't think things are changing, and then you look around and think that everything has changed. And that happens. It doesn't always happen that way, but I think it happens mm-hmm. that way when there are things that seem like they must go on forever. You don't notice right. all of the little bits that happen to the point where that thing is no longer going to go on. There's not a moment, like, there can't be because it's too huge. There's not a moment when all of a sudden we say, hey, you know, Windows isn't relevant anymore. That right. doesn't happen. But there is a moment in the past where Windows is so dominant that it will never go away. It will always be the most important thing in computing. And what ends up happening is computing as a thing becomes something different. And Microsoft becomes something different. And the needs of the users become something different. And there's a whole category of things that aren't Windows PCs anymore. And then Microsoft announces that they're doing a reorg that basically is de-emphasizing Windows. And everybody goes, eh, boring. Because, you know, we didn't, it just, by the time it mattered, it didn't matter anymore, if that makes any right. sense. And that, sure. that is interesting where like you said about the curve, the slope of the curve reducing, you know, the iPhone arriving was like a big moment. And for the first few years, it was this incredible growth for Apple and arms race with Google about features in Android and iOS. And for several years now, it's been irrelevant. Like, I do occasionally hear from somebody who says it's outrageous that Apple's, you know, that iOS doesn't do this when Android does or vice versa. But at this point, it's mostly philosophical. Like, if Apple wanted you to have the level of granularity of notifications that Android has, they would have it. They don't. Right. And so it's right. like it's yeah. not an arms yeah. race so much in that sense. Their arms
it's
race
a
is happening.
Philosophical difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Arms race is happening in machine learning and voice assistants. And there are places where there are arms races happening. But like in the smartphone and touch OSs, it's not. But even though that hasn't changed, the water keeps warming up to the point where I go to an education event now, and it's very clear that from Apple's perspective, it's all about iOS. The Mac is not part of the conversation at all. And, you know, it's only, and if I walked away, and I know it's tangential, but if I walked away from that event thinking anything as a big picture thing, it might be that I can see now the Mac not ending, but now I can more clearly see it sliding away into irrelevance. And I say that as somebody who's used a Mac since college and has written about the Mac for my whole career. Like, and it's that frog thing where by the time I can see that the Mac is sort of fading away, it doesn't matter so much anymore. Cause now I talk yeah. about iOS yeah. and all these things that you can do on iOS. And I had that moment where I thought to myself, well, what apps do I use on my iMac Pro that I just bought for $5,000 every day? What do I use on that isn't replicable on iOS? And it's a small collection of things. Like, there's no Final mm-hmm. Cut. There's no Logic, although Ferrite is pretty close. There are, you know, audio plugins and stuff like that. But a lot of what I use is, you know, it's browsers, which are on both platforms, and we're using Skype for this, Slack. I have music on iTunes. I have a Gmail window open, like messages, like a text editor, and BB Edit's better than my text editors on iOS by a lot. But like the water, that's the thing that struck me. It's like, oh yeah, like, yeah, the thing that keeps me from being all iOS in my work, including on the desktop, is the lack of a big screened iOS device and point or pointing device support, and a few very specific app hurdles or feature hurdles. But it's so small that it's very hard not to just think it's irrelevant, or it is on an infinite time scale, right? On a 5-year time scale,
right.
It's irrelevant. Like, if those are, because for use cases like that, in the next 5 or 10 years, they'll all be ironed out, because they have to be, because they're all that stands between point A and point B. I don't know. It was just that moment. I think it all comes back to the fact that we went from the Mac being Apple's entire story in education, and then you turn around and the Mac is basically not mentioned at a custom Apple education event. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been quite a switch. And I mean, and some of us who are, I think there are those of us who like, are comfortable with the Mac in a way that may not be comfortable with the iOS. And so we'll probably end up holding on to these things for a long time, even as they slide into irrelevance in the rest of the world. But, you know, that's pretty much the case with any kind of technology. I still drive a stick shift car. I like my stick shift car. I'm under no illusions that stick shifts are the way of the future.
No, they're going away.
At least in the
U.S. They're going away.
At least in the U.S. And in other places, they're still fairly common.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same idea. It's, you know, there's less and less of a reason for it, because what used to be kind of a differentiator, you know, but you got better gas mileage or what have you, like, it's not an issue anymore. And so, you know, I think we talk a lot about, you know, Jobs' cars versus trucks thing. And I think there's probably it's just a matter of time scales is really the thing. I think everybody started thinking that was the thing that was going to happen, you know,
in 5 years.
After the iPad got launched. And the answer was no. This is the thing that happens in 10 or 15 years, maybe longer. Who knows? But it's going to happen, because the vast majority, as we've talked about many, many times, vast majority of stuff that everybody needs to do is totally doable on an iOS device, whether it be a phone or a tablet.
Yeah.
And that's just, it's the way it's going to go.
I feel like for most people, it will be like that Microsoft announcement. For most people, not all, because we're all worried about it now when there are things that we do on the Mac that we just can't give up. But by the time it becomes apocalyptic, it won't matter. In almost all circumstances, it won't matter, because we will have knocked down those final little barriers, and it won't matter. And I can already feel it coming. Hello.
It's coming for us. We'll hopefully be irrelevant by that point too.
Sure. That's why I write about iOS stuff. You know, that's what's happening now. And I do write about Mac stuff, and I'm going to do that too, because I am a Mac user, and it is relevant to our audience too. I'm not going to abandon writing about the Mac as long as it's relevant. It's just, you know, less relevant than it was, and there's a market to be served there. And you know, I will remind everybody that when I started at Mac User Magazine in the summer of 1994, as an intern. I don't know when it ended, but when I started as an intern in the summer of 1994, a full 10 years after the Mac had been introduced, upstairs at that publishing company, there was still at least someone publishing an Apple II magazine. So what I'm saying is, platforms live a long time after the platform owner and many of the users vanish, because they are still used to do work. And that's going to continue. You know, Apple's not shutting off the lights on the Mac yet. And when it does, it will be another decade or more before the lights really kind of turn off, and it's only for people who are retro computer enthusiasts like Stephen Hackett, who will probably get the Mac OS source code at some point and release a new version of Mac OS 10 final, like 15, 20, 30 years after the last Mac rolled off an assembly line. This totally happened with the Apple II, by the way. But for most people, it'll be that long ride, and then by the time you would think that it would matter, it won't matter to you anymore. And that's just kind of the way of things. So I'm not loving that idea. And at the same point, I feel that same way, which is, they're not taking my Mac out of my, you know, cold dead hands. They're not. And at some point I will, like, let it go, because it won't be the thing that I'm using to do my job. And that's just, it's weird. It's weird. I can, it's just, I don't know. I can see it now. That is, it's just super telling that the Mac was only mentioned sort of as a legacy platform for teachers at a single point, and that was about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a different world.
Funny how it comes that way. Well, anyway, we're still here. We're still here. The internet's still here. There are lots of interesting devices here for us to write about. And I wrote a Mac tip today, so, you know.
Oh, wow.
Well,
they still exist.
This is my baseball moment, people. But tech's involved, so don't tune out if you hate sports. Baseball season started, and very exciting after 2 years where they've had picture-in-picture in the iOS app, which means for mobile devices, Major League Baseball has been providing HTML5, basically, MPEG-4, essentially, streams for the apps. But on desktop, on computers, like the Mac and Windows, they've still been using Flash or Silverlight or something like that, browser plugin. So I don't have those installed, so I use Chrome, which has them installed, and it runs them. And I do a lot of video stuff when I'm on my Mac in Chrome for that reason. Well, MLB changed, and their player is now an HTML5 player just with standard video streams. Great. They didn't build in picture-in-picture support, but there is a bookmarklet and there's an app called Pipifier, which I use, that will basically pop out the video. And it totally works. And so I wrote that up today, and I imagine people will be searching for that for the next 5 years, and we'll find that article. It's exciting, though, because it's one of those things where we knew that those streams were there, but Major League Baseball wanted you to stick you in their dumb Silverlight thing or whatever instead. And now they don't. And all of a sudden, boom, now you get the ability to just pop out a picture in picture and have it float in the corner of the screen with the baseball game. There are quirks in it, as I mentioned in the article, like all the ads are in a video layer over the game video. So when you're watching in picture in picture, you hear the ads, but you don't see them because they're still playing in the browser in a layer that's above the video layer of the game. It's super funny and weird, but it doesn't matter. It works just fine. So that's great. I can't wait for everybody else to do this so I can do the same feature with them. Because like my Comcast, my Xfinity TV, I can watch any channel that's live on my computer screen in a browser, but it's a Flash requirement now, which is really annoying because I make the little box little, make the browser window little, but it's still got a huge amount of browser Chrome on it. And I put it in the corner, but if a window goes over it, then it obscures it, and it's less than ideal. So, but hey, Mac tip, there it is. You can pop out baseball streams now. And in other baseball news, and this will really turn people off, but every time I write about Major League Baseball, everybody complains that MLB TV is a feature. It doesn't provide your local market games. It provides all the other games that aren't in your local market. And for years now, the standard thing, and I got at least three of them already, is to complain about how they don't do the local games. Well, I just want it for the local games. It's not fair. It's like, okay, first off, if it was your local games, it would cost a fortune because the value of the local games to people in that market is enormous. And MLB right. at bat or MLB TV is priced for the rest of it. That's why it costs what it costs. So it's a different product. But I got, you know, I mock them a little bit, but they were right. You couldn't buy a product with your local games on it that you could stream. That's not true anymore for almost every baseball market. So my patience has run out because now if you live in most markets, I believe at this point, what you have to do is use the local market app. So it's like the NBC Sports app for me because NBC Bay Area is the broadcaster of Giants games and A's games too. But you have to use a local website or app that is whoever is the service that has your local baseball. But you can do it. The next thing they'll say is, yeah, but I'm a cord cutter. Well, guess what? That doesn't matter because you pay for an over-the-top service like YouTube TV or PlayStation View, and they've got that channel. And guess what? As far as they're concerned, you're a subscriber now, and you put in that information, and you can watch the games. So all that's left is, I don't want to pay for it. And it's like, fine, don't pay for it then. But stop complaining that it's not available. Because the truth is, a lot of those people who were complaining were not complaining because it wasn't available. They were complaining because they didn't want to pay for it. And now that it's available, they're going to complain about something different. But the good news news is, if you're in the Bay Area, let's say, you can subscribe to YouTube TV and get access to every Giants and A's game as a cord cutter. That's great. I believe in your area, Dan, I believe Nesson has an app as well, so you presumably subscribe to an over-the-top service, assuming there is one, I imagine there is, that carries Nesson, and then you validate, and boom, you're watching it. Now, maybe those apps, like the NBC app, is way crappier than the MLB at Bat app, and I wish they would let me authenticate in the MLB at Bat app and say, yes, I'm a local Comcast subscriber, please show the Giants game. Alas, right. They don't do that because NBC wants to layer their crappy app and get it on my phone and then put a stupid ad on it and all of those things. But at least I can do it now. So things are getting better.
You're a step up over me. I mean, I have this Comcast streaming package thing that I buy. You know, I mainly just buy the internet. I don't buy television, but Comcast for like $10 a month provides like a streaming thing where you can watch your, you know, TV on your iPad or your iPhone.
Yeah.
But not on your Apple TV, which is the most annoying part about it, because I don't watch that much TV on my iPad. But I got a perfectly... But the thing that really just irked me about it is the fact that all their advertising is like, you can watch on any device. I'm like, no, that's not true. That's patently not true.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have Comcast, and I mean, I have the TV services, but they have that great app on the iPad that'll do basically anything a cable box will do, but they don't do it on the Apple TV, which would theoretically allow you to like throw your cable box away. Not really, because it doesn't do DVR and stuff, but they'll get there. They'll get there. But the fact is, as a cable cutter, even if you didn't have the Comcast thing, you could sign up for YouTube TV or PlayStation View or one of those services. And I believe, right. You know, I don't know the vagaries of every single market. I can tell you in the Bay Area that's all you do. You sign up for YouTube TV, and then you've got access to stream the sports on their apps and stuff like that, and it all just kind of works, even if you're out of the home. So, I don't know. It's getting better all the time, but moves more slowly. Whenever there's big organizations and a lot of money involved, all of this stuff moves more slowly. But I like the fact that years after mobile devices had these completely standard HTML5, you know, MPEG-4 streams for live sports, finally they're getting around to implementing them on browser for desktop. And this is actually a great example of why it would be nice if it was easy for apps to be ported from iOS to Mac, because this thing would all be solved if I could just run MLB at Bat app on my Mac, because I can solve it all by just putting my iPad next to my Mac playing a game. It's just kind of dumb. Why can't I put it on my Mac? And the answer is because the app isn't on your Mac and the web experience is bad. Like, so close. So close. I could run that Xfinity app,
made it.
And it has picture in picture. It was like, and it yeah, and it doesn't have Flash, but it's just not there yet. Anyway, what a world! What a funny world! We should probably sign off. I should probably send out. Do you find any other mistakes in the?
I think it's covered. I think it's covered.
I made a couple of changes to Steven's thing, and I had a mistake in the second paragraph of my thing, and then other than that, we're good.
Yep. Yeah. I think we're solid. I think we should send it out. I hope people enjoy it.
All right, podcast listeners. Guess what? I am going to go to... Where do I do this? How do I send save? Okay. And
this is podcast gold, listeners.
Send. Prepare for launch. Send now. Oh, yeah. We sent out the Six Colors newsletter.
Live.
During the podcast.
Crazy.
I hope there's not a terrible mistake in it. I apologize if there is. All right. Well, thanks for subscribing. Check out your inbox, or maybe you already did, and for listening to this podcast, and you help us keep the lights on as always. Until next time, Dan, have a good weekend. Bye.
You too. Bye.